I'm Dave Drexler, and that's music from guitarist Jim Hall, who passed away earlier this week. The guitar is the focus in this segment of Inside Art as we visit the Reuben H. Fleet Science Center for the West Coast premiere of Guitar, the instrument that rocked the world. This unique hands-on interactive collection opens December 20th and celebrates the history, culture, and science of what is clearly the world's most popular instrument. The exhibit is the creation of the National Guitar Museum, which also hopes to find a permanent home for themselves among the many cities presenting the exhibit. Joining me to preview Guitar, I'm pleased to welcome the founder of the National Guitar Museum and former editor-in-chief of Guitar Magazine, Harvey Newquist. Harvey, welcome to Inside Art.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me about the formation of the National Guitar Museum.
Well, it came about when several of my colleagues and I realized that there's no guitar museum anywhere in the world. It's the world's most popular instrument. There are over 3 million sold every year. And yet there are museums for teacups and barbed wire and ventriloquist dummies, and yet not for the world's most popular instrument. There are a number of factory museums for individual manufacturers, but nothing that really looks at the entire history of the guitar and its impact on popular culture. So starting in 2009, we began laying plans for creating the world's first museum dedicated to the guitar. And 2009, as most of us remember, was not the brightest and happiest of economic days. So we, instead of setting up in New York City where we're based or just outside, we decided to take it on the road and kind of look across the country for places that might be the most hospitable to a permanent museum. And in the process, we get to tour it from city to city to city and create an awareness of what the museum ultimately will be when it becomes a permanent standalone entity.
Interesting that you would have this auditioning process as you take it around the country.
It really is. It's a good way to kind of get a feel for the communities. We're usually 3 to 6 months into each city. And we've been to seven. Actually, San Diego is our seventh. We've booked 8 more in the future, and we'll probably keep booking them as long as people keep asking. But at the end of it, we do want to look back and see which place really lent itself to having it become a permanent location for our museum.
Well, how did the guitar become the most popular instrument in the world?
There's a number of schools of thought on that. One of them, which I think is really probably the closest, is it's one of the only instruments that you can carry with you. It's portable, unlike a piano or an organ or a drum set. It can be thrown into a backpack. It can be thrown over a saddle. It can be put in a train. But you can also sing along with it. You can't do that with a flute. You can't do that with wind. You can't do that with violin. So you had the combination of an instrument that was both easy to carry.
Portable.
Very portable. And mobile for those people like itinerant bluesmen and for cowboys. And you could also accompany yourself with it. And so it gave a certain freedom of expression to music that allowed you to do sort of two things at once that you couldn't do like with a piano or a drum set or a flute and singing. And the other idea is that it is really the only instrument that you have to embrace. You have to hold it close to your body. So the sounds that you're making, the actual air sound waves that are being pushed forward, resonate within your chest. And I think for a lot of people, there's something very intimate about playing it. And, you know, it's one of the only things you can do your entire life. You can play the guitar till the day you die. You can't play football till the day you die. You can't even play, you know, tennis till the day you die. But the guitar is something that is an instrument of expression, and you can do it for as long as you want.
So putting together this exhibit, what were some of the major factors that went into the planning and acquisition?
We really wanted to have instruments that tracked the course of the history of the not only the guitar, but of stringed instruments in general. Along the way, there were some really important gets, as we say. One of those is one of the earliest 6 strings ever made, and we have one of those from 1806. Another one was one of the very first electric guitars, which is known as the Rickenbacker frying pan. So we had one of those as well. And then there were kind of odds and ends. I mean, there are some classic guitars, the Gibson Les Paul, the Fender Stratocaster, the Fender Telecaster, the Gibson SG. They were kind of expected. But then we found other unusual guitars that showed a shift in change. A lot of those were actually made by the Martin factory and the Martin family, which still makes guitars today, and the Gibson factory and the Gibson company. And then sort of little oddballs. I mean, we wanted things that were really showed a change in everything from design to the materials that were used. So we identified for this tour 60 specific instruments that we acquired over the course of 3 years before we actually opened it. And for the permanent museum, we've got a goal of about 280 to 300 guitars that we think would create a definitive collection, of which we have about 200 so far. So we're almost there.
And are there any guitars that were that have a famous pedigree, or did you purposefully avoid the sort of thing?
Well, we actually did try to avoid it a little bit. We because it's a history of the instrument and not a history of the players, it's easy to tie the players into the instrument. But if you're focusing on the players, you kind of lose the fact that they're using a particular kind of instrument. Rather than focus on the players, we looked at an instrument, say the Fender Stratocaster, which was used by everybody from Buddy Holly and Jimi Hendrix on up to Eric Clapton and John Mayer. That way we can talk about why this instrument is important and not necessarily what they did in their careers that benefited from the guitar. And we also really wanted to focus on points in history and artifacts that would show why the guitar sounded the way it did and why it appealed to people in a certain way. So again, using the Stratocaster as an example, the world's most popular instrument model, the Stratocaster sells more than any other guitar, and why certain musicians are attracted to that. And it has to do with sound quality and the way it feels and the way it was designed. So we do have instruments like we have Johnny Winter's Firebird. Joe Bonamassa has got a guitar here. Leona Boyd, the classical guitarist, has one. Adrian Ballou, Steve Vai's original gem. So we do have a lot of guitars in here, but they're all unusual, and they all are they can stand on their own, even though we've gotten them from famous guitarists.
It's interesting that Southern California has played a big role in the development of modern guitar. Maybe you can talk about that.
Well, Southern California was home not only to a large preponderance of, I would say surf music, but we'll get to that in a minute, Hawaiian steel bands. And that was very important in the creation of the first electric guitars, because Hawaiian music in the early part of the 1900s was the most popular form of music in America. And even though it originated in Hawaii, a lot of it emerged from San Francisco and Los Angeles. But then, as country took hold and replaced Hawaiian music, you had a lot of people in Bakersfield and a lot of people all the way down to the Mexican border who were playing country music. And so Southern California became a hotbed for creating guitars that had to be heard above the din, especially in a country band where you've got fiddles and you've got loud hollering and yodeling. And so Leo Fender, who was up in Fullerton, was one of the first people to address their needs and electrify guitars as a mass-produced instrument. So you've got that. Then you have surf music, which obviously originated here. And that whole twangy thing started right on the beaches of Southern California. So you've got two major movements. You've got country music and surf music that benefited from and to some degree drove the use of the electric guitar in the United States and eventually the world.
Let's look at the amplification aspect of it, though. That historically is a practical need for the type of music that's being played. And then that becomes an art in and of itself.
It really does. Leo Fender, again, from Fullerton, was one of the first people to realize that. The country artists were, as I said, having a tough time being heard when they were playing in bars and playing in clubs and even in theaters. The guitar, an acoustic guitar, just can't be heard above a drum set. I don't care. No acoustic guitar is that loud. And it's true when you add more people. You add singers, you add fiddlers, you add a stand-up bass, you add a honky-tonk piano. The guitar is way in the back. And guitarists don't like to be way in the back.
We know that, yeah.
Guitars like to be way up front. So from the day the electric guitar was made, the point of continuing the production of it was to get louder and louder so that you could be heard over a band. It also was true of jazz bands. You had guys like Les Paul, who, as I said to you earlier, did not invent the electric guitar, but was in a band where he couldn't be heard over the horns and the percussion section. So he developed a form of electric guitar that helped him be heard above this huge number of musicians. So not only were they electrified, they found ways to electrify their guitar, but then they had to amplify them. And amplifiers, guys like Leo Fender and Jim Marshall over in England, created basically modified radio cabinets. Because for a long time, electric guitars were plugged into radio cabinets, but you had to lug around this big, heavy radio cabinet with tubes, and created dedicated amplifiers with large speakers that could propel a lot of sound waves far across a room. And today, you can amplify a guitar to the point where literally it'll shatter your eardrums. It's over 120 decibels. Yeah. So the history of guitar has gone from, hey, I can't hear myself, to, hey, you can't hear anything louder than me ever again. So amps have become a very critical part of any performance for any musician or any guitarist in any genre.
And the guitar making and amplification, that's all part of this exhibit as well.
It is. We show not only the insides and outsides of what goes into making an electric guitar and all the parts, and we do it with acoustics. We explode them so you can see how it's braced and how the wood... You know, the inside of an acoustic guitar is no thicker than a popsicle stick, yet it has to support a string pull of over 200 pounds. Well, you can snap a popsicle stick, you know, with two fingers, but a guitar can withstand that amount of pull, 200 pounds, with no problem at all. And it all has to do with the bracing and how it's designed inside. So we show that. We also do that with the amps. We created cutaway amps and that you can see through and see how big the tubes are and how big the magnets are that are on the speakers. So it's a lot of hands-on and seeing and touching. We also have an interactive that'll show you how loud a guitar can get and how loud that compares to the loudest sound ever, which is a volcano exploding, which is the loudest sound that's ever been recorded.
And that is a visual representation?
Yes, you can touch. Okay. You can touch, yeah. So you don't, it doesn't actually do that to your eardrums, but it'll show you on a meter how loud these things get.
Talk about the family-friendly nature of the exhibit, too.
Well, one of the things that I think most people of a certain age, let's say boomers, you know, most boomers grew up either playing the guitar or wanting to. And they certainly listen to bands that play guitar. And so our generation really, really embraced the guitar and pushed it to the level of popularity that it is today. We expect a lot of dads. We found a lot in the places that we've been, a lot of dads have brought their kids. So we've made it something where if dads are interested in playing with all the interactives, and moms too, of course, but moms typically come to museums, if they want to play with all the interactives, they're going to learn some cool things that they didn't know, especially perhaps how pickups work. But their kids, who are naturally inquisitive, are going to spin things and touch things, and they're going to learn almost by accident that this is how the guitar works. Here's how sound waves are generated. Here's how you amplify an electrical signal. Meanwhile, mom and dad can go look at guitars that maybe they used to play or always wished they'd had one, or I remember so-and-so playing one of those when I saw him in concert. So it's got a real, not only a family feel, but a generational feel, where people of all generations can kind of come and learn and hopefully be inspired.
It's a fascinating exhibit at the Reuben H. Fleet Science Center, opening December 20th, and it goes through April 6th. And I've been speaking with the, you're not the curator, are you?
That's my job as well, yes.
Okay, you are the curator and the founder of the National Guitar Museum. I've been speaking with Harvey Newquist, and thank you again, Harvey, for being my guest on Inside Art, and we wish you all the best and happy holidays.
Well, thank you. You too.
Once again, guitar, the instrument that rocked the world, opens December 20th and runs through April 6th at the Reuben H. Fleet Science Center in Balboa Park. More information is available at rhfleet.org. Inside Art is made possible with support from the members of Jazz 88.3. If you missed any of tonight's program, you can listen to it again online at jazz88.org/insideart. And a selected archive of Inside Art programs is now available on the Jazz 88 Speakeasy page. Again, my thanks to Harvey Newquist and Patrick Kelly. For Jazz 88.3, I'm Dave Drexler. Good night.